Let's call the meeting of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 3:29 on Tuesday, February 17th, 2015. Present today are Senators McKinnon, Senator Stedman, Senator Hoffman is excused, he's in Kotzebue, Senator Egan, I think will be along shortly, and myself, Senator Bishop. I'd like to recognize the staff today, Christopher Dickwell from Senate Records. Good afternoon, sir. Sam Greeley is our teleconference, no. Sam is working distant delivery on the teleconference. And my committee staff are John Manley and Brittany Hutchison. Again, we all know that cell phones need to turn them off as it interferes with the communications. And today's meeting, we'll hear from Senator Giesel, Senate Bill 45, Parks and Recreation Service Area Boundaries, and followed by then Senator Coghill's Bill Number 43. That one is immunity for fire department and members by Senator Coghill. And Senator Giesel, I know you've squished here, so the floor is yours. And Jane Conway is also in attendance, assisting the Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Senator Kathy Giesel, representing Senate District M, which is in Anchorage. That's relevant because Senate Bill 45 is actually dealing with an issue that's happening in the municipality of Anchorage. I'm not going to delve deeply into the weeds on this because we have some folks online who are going to be able to speak to it with great knowledge. But essentially, there are sections of Anchorage, and you have a map before you. The sections which are in question are brown in color. And these sections have over time, and the people online will be able to explain the history of this to you, been excluded from taxation for the parks in the Anchorage area. And the areas that are brown have significant parks in them, and the residents essentially are not contributing to the upkeep of those parks. So this bill comes forward as a request from the municipality to correct this oversight, this imperfection in the tax structure. It's a very simple bill, which I know is a death knell. There's only one section, section one, and I guess I'll turn it over to my able staff, Jane, to explain section one.
Wow. This is Jane Conway's staff to Senator Giesel. Section one, only section of the bill, amends the statute to allow a borough or unified municipality to change the boundaries of a park and rec area service area to include a subdivision or parcel that is wholly or partially within the exterior boundaries of the service area without voter approval. Right now, there needs to be voter approval if they are to be incorporating a service area that is not currently included for taxation.
Okay, and online too, I believe we have John Rota, Director of MRA Parks and Recs, to testify to the bill. And Senator McKinnon?
Thank you. I'm wondering if we need to have an effective date or if just the date that the bill is signed is all right. I'm wondering if you've checked on that.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, I will check on that. Thank you. And yes, Mr. Rada should be able to speak to the bill and may have an opinion on the effective date as well. And we were told that Dennis Wheeler, the municipality of Anchorage attorney, would also be online, but I don't know for sure that he is.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. You're welcome. Senator Stedman?
Okay, Mr. Chairman. Recognizing the dense population of Anchorage relative to everywhere else, I was just wondering, does the structure affect any other Fairbanks or any other populated areas? It's just Anchorage?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, it is our understanding that Anchorage is the only municipality affected by this provision that the folks in these areas have to vote to tax themselves. It's a nuance in Anchorage only.
Senator, follow up? Just a quick one, because I apologize, I'm not as familiar with the Anchorage layout and yes, the ins and outs of southern areas of the state. But the Parks and Recs service area boundary, is that, how does that relate to the municipality's lines, and can the municipality just change those boundaries, or how does that work?
That is a great question through the chair, Senator Stedman. Would it be all right if Mr. Rada answered that question?
And also online for questions, we have Dennis Wheeler, the attorney.
Yes.
As well, so.
The short part of your question is the municipality itself actually extends beyond that red line. It goes all the way down to the end of Turnagain Arm, includes Girdwood and Portage, and then it moves, it would be eastward and includes Eagle River and Chugiak as well.
So, Senator McKinnon.
To add to that for clarity, we have more than one park service area in the municipality of Anchorage, so Eagle River has a taxing area that's a park service area, and Anchorage has a park service area that is different. And so Anchorage may, from one's perspective, choose to bond for an improvement in there, and the folks that live in the geographic area benefit predominantly from those. And the folks in Eagle River have a park service area, and they tend to save their money and then invest and purchase a park. So Anchorage has, just for the record, at least two different park service areas in our community.
Okay. And Senator Stedman's question, we were going to let, is Mr. Rada going to take a stab at that? Is that correct?
That would be okay, Mr. Stedman.
So if you don't mind, Senator Stedman, I almost want to dovetail on with a question that you maybe capture them both. So the red line on this topo that we have is the current park's boundaries.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
And if this bill was to be successful, that boundary would it skirt the brown, or what would the red line look like if this bill passed? Would it be on the map, off the map, or?
This is up to the municipality, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Senator Giesel. It is my understanding that on the lower part, lower right-hand side, it would skirt around that rather large brown area. This is my district, frankly. This is a highly populated area up on the hillside, high-end homes typically. So it would go around and include all of that. The green area, of course, is Chugach State Park. Then this is Stuckagan Heights. It's a subdivision up in the mountains again. Again, a high-end residential area. So my understanding is the municipality would bring that into the park service area also.
Okay, thank you. So, Senator Stubman, do we think you should restate your question? Or John, are you online, Mr. Rada?
Yes, I am.
Did you understand Senator Stedman's question?
I did. For the record, my name is John Rada. I'm the Parks and Recreation Director for the Municipality of Anchorage. What you have before you, the map represents the existing boundaries for the bowl, if you will, for the Municipality of Anchorage, as identified by Senator McKinnon. Chugiak Eagle River has its own service area, but the red is the border from the unification of the city and the borough 40 years ago, and that border was never modified or adjusted, and probably nobody really ever thought at the time that Anchorage would grow beyond that border. And so that's what, and Dennis Wheeler, municipal attorney, can speak to this better than I, but that's what has existed for many, many years. And then with the growth of Anchorage, development occurred, and now people have built extensively outside of what the bold red line represents as the taxing district, and therefore falling outside the municipality, the bowl per se, they are exempt from paying any, in this case, property taxes for parks and recreation services. And so this legislation addresses moving that line, and again, Mr. Wheeler would have to speak to where that line would go, but it would bring those other property owners into more of an equitable relationship with the rest of the taxpayers, and everybody would be paying equally for the services, the maintenance, the capital projects, and the things we all enjoy within the municipality.
Thank you. Senator Stedman, follow up?
No, I think if I'm interpreting what he's saying right again, because it's just I don't understand the history of the community like I do some of the other ones down here, but these are the old municipal lines that basically became irrelevant with the expansion into a borough. So this is basically borough cleanup, more or less. So you could pick these areas up, because these lines really can't be adjusted.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, you are correct. The way the law is written now, over 60% of the residents that live in the area have to vote to become part of the taxation structure. So if you have 10 homes, for example, the residents of 6 of those homes have to say, yes, mm-hmm. we'll pay taxes into the Parks and Rec taxation structure. Clearly, people have not been willing to do that. But that's created this inequity of significant areas. In fact, this area here on the lower right-hand side has several new parks in it. There's a very large area that's going to be developed into a park, and these folks, while enjoying the parks, are paying nothing for them. The information that we have from Mr. Rada is that about $186 million worth of tax-valued property is not contributing to the tax base in Anchorage because of this old, obsolete law. And so, again, I'm speaking outside of my knowledge area, in which case Mr. Wheeler, municipal attorney, who's on the phone, can probably give you a precise legal answer.
I'd like to let the record reflect Senator Egan has joined us. Welcome, Senator Egan. Yes, ma'am. Senator McKinnon.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I have two questions, and I'll just restate one of Senator Stedman's questions to the municipal attorney, Dennis Wheeler. One, does this legislation impact any other service areas in our state? Because I think Fairbanks has fire service areas, mm-hmm. and so we'd like to know if this would extend to other areas. And two, what specifically does this legislation allow in regards to changing the existing boundary?
Mr. Wheeler, are you online?
I am, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Please, you understood the question, and can you give us a comment, please?
Yes, sir. For the record, my name is Dennis Wheeler. I am the municipal attorney for the municipality of Anchorage. As to question number one, the focus of the bill is solely on parks and rec service areas. It's not meant to address other kinds of service areas like fire or police service areas. I do not know whether other jurisdictions in the state have park and rec service areas. If they did, and there were some issues with what is included or not included, they could take advantage of this legislation. With respect to what does it do with existing boundaries, it allows the local governing body, acting through its legislative body, which in this case would be the Anchorage Assembly, to make adjustments. They would do that by ordinance through public hearing. So the way we do it here is we would propose an ordinance to the Assembly. It would be noticed. It would go down to the affected community councils. And those residents and those councils could weigh in on the proposal, and the Assembly could make the adjustments that it felt was in the best interest of the citizens at that point. The other thing it does in that sense then is it gets rid of the dual vote requirement, which I think is inequitable. And that requirement is explained by the sponsor. Basically means that even if all of the residents of Anchorage Bowl voted to include those properties to spread the tax burden, if those properties themselves didn't also vote for it, it would be defeated. And it gives them a special, if you will, veto power. And to my mind, that overrides what we normally think of as one person, one vote concepts when we talk about governance.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? I I'd like to check with the Fairbanks North Star Borough as well. We're going to hear and hold a bill today, and we'll dig into some in a little more depth Senator McKinnon's questions, and I know Senator Egan's question, sir.
No, just Mr. Chair, I agree. I want to check with the City Girls Journal.
Very good, thank you. Okay.
All right.
Well, no other questions. We'll set this one aside, and we'll do our homework, and excuse me. Is anybody from the public here that would like to testify to this bill? I see some familiar faces in the back, and several, you know, regulars. Okay. anybody online that's, I see we have a couple from Fairbanks online, Jill Dolan and David Gibbs from the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I see it's questions only, but just wanted to give you the opportunity in case something jogged your memory here.
No.
Seeing none, we're going to set this bill aside, and thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. So, we closed the public hearing is closed. And we're going to set this bill aside, and Senator Coghill is going to try to make it, but I think his staff's in the room. We're going to take up Senate Bill 43. So Mr. Schilling's in the room, and please come up and put your name on the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill, and Jill Dolan, the assistant borough attorney, is on to assist me.
If I assist you, okay.
David Gibbs as well.
All right. Thank you.
So thank you for hearing the bill today. Senator Coghill probably won't be here. He's tied up in another committee. He sent me as his delegate. So this bill, Senate Bill 43, addresses an issue that came to our attention during the interim when the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly was discussing it. And since that time, you know, the borough reached out to us. We got a bill drafted, and right now it's one of their priorities to see this pass. But the issue is that there's an inequity in statute. Currently, there are some immunities given to fire departments and their members in statute. And in particular, that immunity applies to employees of municipal fire departments, and then municipal departments themselves, not just staff, receive some protections as well. And so why we give fire departments immunities in the first place, you know, government immunity of all types is fairly common. Most, if not all, states give immunity to the staff of fire departments, and many states also extend immunities to the fire departments themselves. Because there's major risks involved in running a fire department. You're conducting fire suppression, you're trying to save property and life, you're doing rescue operations, and there's kind of an element of the unknown. It's an unpredictable job. You know, you're moving large vehicles, heavy equipment. So that being said, the statutes in question that we are attempting to make changes to is 0965070, and subsection C is where we're working in. And what this section does is, like I said, it applies an immunity to staff of municipally operated fire departments. The concern is that the way that this statute was written, the immunity does not apply to the staff of the types of fire departments that we have in Fairbanks, which are contract departments. So we did a little research on this statute and tried to figure out why maybe inadvertently contract departments were left out. This statute was came into effect in 1975. It was SB 257. It was actually introduced at the request of the Juneau Volunteer Fire Department, and it was patterned after a Delaware statute. And the problem with the language, like I said, is it seems to leave out departments that contract with local governments. So 1975 was the first year that committees were required to record their meetings, and the library didn't have a whole lot of in the way of committee minutes for us, so it's kind of difficult to get a sense of the committee's intent at the time. But we just feel strongly that these liability protections should not be exclusive to employees of fire departments operated by municipalities, but should also also be extended to include the staff of all fire departments that have a contractual relationship with local government. Now, the bill also does something in addition to that. It gives immunity to contracted fire departments, the entity itself, not just the staff, and it adds to the existing immunity that municipal fire departments already have in subsection D of this section of law. And so, in a nutshell, that is the bill. I've got a couple lifelines on the phone. If there's any legal questions, like I said, Jill Dolan is on the phone, assistant borough attorney. Also have David Gibbs, who runs the EMS program for the borough. And then I've got a handful of fire chiefs on the line able to answer questions about their operations.
Thank you. Questions from committee members? As Mr. Schilling said, we have a great cross-section of expertise online for questions and comments. Senator Stebbin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious if there's been any litigation in the past. Thank you. The presentation was referenced that this came into place in 1977. So has there been litigation that was successful or unsuccessful dealing with this issue?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I'm aware of one that has been talked about frequently in Fairbanks. I've got the case right here, and I think Jill can probably speak better to it than I. I believe it was unsuccessful, and as far as other litigation, I'm sure there have been. I just don't have them right here in my binder.
Let's see if Jill Dolan's online and let her speak to Senator Stedman's question. Jill, are you online?
Hi there. Yes, I am.
State your name.
And thank you to Jordan for allowing us to be here today and working with us on this. Yeah, there is a case that actually went to the Alaska Supreme Court that kind of brought this issue to the forefront. Things were a little bit different in that legal case because at the time our fire chiefs of the involved fire department were municipal employees, so they were extended immunity under the current 9570. So now that our fire chiefs are actually employees of the nonprofits that we contract with, we do have a concern that they'll lose their immunity under this law if they are no longer considered municipal employees. So the other issue in the Regner case was whether or not we could get things just dismissed as a matter of law under immunity or whether or not they became fact issues for the court. And so that case is actually still continuing. It's been a litigation now that's been, it's spanned the course of several years. So these are, I mean, they're taxing to the resources of the fire departments, and then of course that's a cost gets passed along to the taxpayers and impacts insurance rates and things of that nature. And so that's really what we're trying to do here is contain that exposure and try and protect those fire departments from some of that liability.
Okay, and for the record, that was Jill Dolan. So in the future, I just want to put it on the record, if you testify and I call your name, please put your name on the record and your affiliation, please.
Okay, thank you.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jill, so if a volunteer firefighter is hurt, they do not have standing for a workman's comp claim. Is that what is going on here also?
They absolutely do. So even volunteer firefighters are covered under the workers' compensation laws, and so that this wouldn't impact workers' compensation claims of the firefighters. This would be action such as if a fire department responded to a fire and the homeowner complained that they didn't send two engines, they only sent one. This covers those types of acts.
Senator McKinnon?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And how about gross negligence, then? Is there still a cause where something that is of a higher standard could still, that the homeowner still could lay a claim?
As drafted, the version that's in front of you would exclude gross negligence. So no, I guess no, a homeowner could not bring a claim in that circumstance.
And Mr. Chairman, If I may, this is the way that the bill is written now. We are establishing a fairly comprehensive immunity for fire departments. Total immunity would be the term. And I've been speaking with Jill and the borough attorneys, and they've suggested if the committee and the legislature is uncomfortable with this complete immunity, there is an example in the 911 immunity statutes, some language that we could pull into this potentially that would make an exception for intentional misconduct and gross negligence, okay. An extreme form of negligence.
Thank you. Mr. Schilling, thank you for that. Online, we have Chief Mitch Flynn, I believe, is online, and if the committee, I'd like to let the chief testify right now at this point because I have a question myself, but I'm going to yield to my committee members and save mine for the end. But Mr. Flynn, Chief Flynn, are you online?
I am online, and thank you for allowing me to be here and be able to speak before the committee.
All right, the floor is yours, your name for the record, and please proceed.
My name is Mitch Flynn. I'm the fire chief of the Steve Spalding Fire Department in Fairbanks. I'm actually also the CEO of a 501c3 nonprofit organization that provides fire and EMS services to the Steve Fire Service Area and non-fire service area to the north and to the east and a little bit to the west areas of Fairbanks. It ends up being about 2,200 square miles for EMS services and about 39.5 square miles for fire service areas. And this bill before us is one that actually has been on our radar and on our plate for a number of years. And even before the Leo Regner lawsuit, we were concerned about liability, possible liability. We're a combination fire department that employs full-time people as well as volunteers. And recruitment and retention is always a concern of combination departments. And one of the questions we get asked is, hey, what's the liability if I get involved and that kind of thing. So the borough attorney's brought up to our attention here in recent years of a possible exposure, and operating under those kind of conditions becomes quite detrimental to managing a department, having to be concerned about lawsuits that really shouldn't go forward, and at the same time be able to do our job and be able to respond to emergency without worrying about lawsuit each day. And looking at the departments that run the way we are under 501c3 IRS regulations and all, and there's approximately 70,000 residents affected by this. And if an incident happened and a lawsuit occurred that we're really in the course of doing our job, excluding negligence, gross negligence, and willful acts of misconduct and things, those 70,000 residents could be adversely affected by higher insurance premiums and things. So by passing this bill, even as amended, if that goes through, speaking with our broker, up there, insurance broker that gives us our premiums or writes our policies, he was very much in support of it and said that by reducing the risk to your department, thereby it also would reduce your insurance premiums. So more tax dollars would then go to firefighting activities and less toward having to pay out on high insurance properties. And we do have our own workers' comp. This would not be affected by that. Our volunteers and our paid members are well taken care of since, again, we're that combination department.
Thank you, Chief. For questions from committee members, I have one while we're thinking. Chief Flynn, thanks for the testimony. I have a question. Do you, to the volunteer departments, do you train to the same standards as the muni fire departments?
That's a very good question, and the answer to that is yes, we do. In fact, training probably takes on more of an emphasis because we're training every day. Every shift trains and things. We operate more in my organization. We operate more like a full-time department. Our volunteers come in and pull shifts. alongside our paid staff. I have two 24-hour paid staff on duty each day. Volunteers will come in. And then I have a third-tier group of people called college interns, where we provide full-ride scholarships and to attend University of Alaska Fire Sign program for the CTC program. And so we have quite the staffing and they'll staff all three shifts. We run out of three stations. And thereby, by doing it this way, we have improved our fire insurance premiums for homeowners that went from an 8B down to a 5. And that represents about a 40% savings in insurance premium that a homeowner pays out, and actually in many cases more than pays for the fire tax they're paying. The total savings on a insurance premium on an average home ends up being about 2-to-1. So for every dollar you pay in fire tax, we're putting $2 back in your pocket in insurance savings. You get your insurance and you get your fire response at the same time.
Thank you, Chief. Other questions from Senator McKinnon?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two things. First, I would like to declare a potential conflict of interest. I have two boys. Both have been volunteer firefighters, so they would benefit from a change in the current law. So I'm not sure how we would proceed on that. One of them isn't volunteering at this time. He's a new daddy. But my other son continues to volunteer at Chugiak Fire Station. So I'd like to put that on the record. My question, Mr. Chairman, is that our legal department has actually rewritten the section and reenacted it, and how they went about that, I'm wondering whether it affects the definition section. And so the title, inside of Title IX, 65.070, talks about different immunities for the government. And the context of how it's written now, I just don't know whether it affects anyone else, because it remains, the definitions remain the same in later portions of D in describing. So I just wonder if we have consistency in our definitions or whether those need to change. I'm sure legal's already reviewed it, but I know you met with my staff. I don't know that answer.
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, I believe that all the substantive elements of 0965070C as written now are contained in here. Really, the only addition is that we're trying to bring contract departments under it. But you're right, it was repealed and rewritten, I think, just to fit current drafting conventions. But I did ask Susie Schutz, the drafter, to be online today. I'm not sure if she is or not, Mr. Chairman.
She is here online for questions. So, Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, if Ms. Schutz could comment on the, whether it was a drafting conformity or whether there's actually any possible ramifications that might be unknown as we're trying to include someone in the process. Is something going to happen to the existing municipalities or village fire departments that are currently included under different language, currently existing in C?
For the record, this is Susie Schutz with Ledgebury Legal Services. Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, to answer your question, it was repealed and reenacted, although the deleting and bracketing is more commonly used when there are many changes. Appeal and reenactment is sometimes more appropriate under the drafting manual. And as far as the definitions, the two definitions in Section E, which are, in subsection E, which are two municipalities defined and also villages defined, though that language is still used in C, and so the meaning would not be changed as far as those definitions are applied.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We have Robert Grove from the Esther Fire Service areas online, and he has also intended to want to testify. So, Mr. Grove, are you online? Do you want to testify?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman. Do you hear me?
Yes, sir. The floor is yours. Name and introduction, and the floor is yours.
Thank you. I'm Robert Grove, and I'm here representing the Estes Fire Service Area Commission. I'm the chairman of the board. I have been in the fire service for, I was in the fire service as an active firefighter for over 20 years as a fire chief and as a line officer all the way down to a grunt. I was on the board of directors for 6 years, and once again, I'm currently the chairman of the Fire Service Commission. And just to give the committee a little history here, all of the nonprofits, North Star Fire, Volunteer Fire Department, Chief Goldstream, Esther, Steese, pretty much have a very similar setup. The commissioners pretty much serve at the pleasure of the mayor, and the board pretty much runs the day-to-day operations of the fire department. We've been working on solving some of these problems for a long time, and most recently we basically have been meeting with the borough, and that the commissioners, the fire chiefs, and staff have been working with trying to see about delivering fire service in the Fairbanks North Star borough in the best possible way. So this issue of liability has come up. Last night we had a commission meeting and we were reading old correspondence, and this issue has been around for a while. In fact, we were reading correspondence from Mayor Juanita Helms about liability issues in 1989. So this bill is very appropriate and very timely. It has caused some problems over the years as far as not knowing whether or not one was covered for different things, and I strongly recommend that you pass this, and it would be very, very helpful for all the fire departments up here, including the city, because there are mutual aid agreements and automatic aid agreements that has let the city of Fairbanks end up lowering their ISO rating down to a 1, which there are many municipalities throughout the United States that cannot get their ISO ratings down to a 1. And there are many reasons that Chief Cummings was successful in doing that, and one of them was the mutual aid and automatic aid agreements with the surrounding fire departments and the combination volunteer and paid personnel. So that's pretty much all I have to say. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Grove. Any committee members have questions of Mr. Grove? I'd just like to say, first off here, just a backspace for about 5 minutes ago, Senator McKinnon had declared a potential conflict. She has two sons that work in the fire service industry, and there is no conflict. Thank you for your children's service. Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just point out to you, I'm still a trustee. I'm a juvenile volunteer fire department, former juvenile volunteer for the fire department, and we own a building. So, but I was a volunteer for 13 years.
Well, thank you for being a volunteer. I don't see any conflict there either. I would like to Senator Stedman, you have a question?
No, I'm not. I'm innocent.
You're listening. I want to follow up on Chief Flynn's comment. And something that jumped out at me is, provided this piece of legislation goes forward and passes in its current form or maybe an amended form, the savings that could be realized by the departments in the times that we're in right now, looking everywhere we can to save a nickel. I keyed in on what Chief Flynn said, and that means that it would appear to me that more assets could go to fighting the fires and for the training, and maybe less requests coming to the legislature on some realized savings. Any other questions from committee members? Senator Egan.
Mr. Chair, I'm just curious. I can get the answer later, but what did Juno do in 1975? Was it a question about service districts? board were unified, or?
Through the chair, Senator Egan, I do not know. I can get that to you, though.
I'm just curious. Yes. We can find it out. Thank you.
For the record, no other questions. I'm going to close public comment. And if there are no other comments from the committee, I'd like to thank Senator Coghill and his trusty staff, Mr. Schilling. We're going to set this bill aside for today. Any other questions coming through the committee today? Yes. Seeing none. Before we close, I see that Sam Greeley is now turned into Danae Burns, I believe. And thank you, Danae, for running our teleconference operator. Seeing none, thanks everyone for participating. And with that, I'm going to adjourn today's meeting with Community and Regional Affairs at 4:10.